A fierce abolitionist, feminist, and member of the women's suffrage movement, Sarah Moore Grimke was the author of the first developed public argument for women's equality. Through her writing, Sarah inspired and gave language to the other influential women of her day, women such as Lucy Stone, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and Lucretia Mott, who borrowed her words to advance the cause. In 1837, Sarah wrote a series of 15 letters on the equality of the sexes. My name is Emily Dorset, and from the second of those 15, these are her words. Letter 2, Woman Subject Only to God. Newburyport, July 17th, 1837. My dear sister, in my last, I trace the creation and the fall of man and woman from the state of purity and happiness which their beneficent creator designed them to enjoy. As they were one in transgression, their chastisement was the same. Quote, so God drove out the man, and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden a cherubim and a flaming sword, which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. We now behold them expelled from paradise, fallen from their original loveliness, but still bearing on their foreheads the image and superscription of Jehovah, still invested with high moral responsibilities, intellectual powers, and immortal souls. They had incurred the penalty of sin. They were shorn of their innocence, but they stood on the same platform side by side, acknowledging no superior but their God. Notwithstanding what has been urged, woman, I am aware, stands charged to the present day with having brought sin into the world. I shall not repel the charge by any counter assertions, although, as was before hinted, Adam's ready acquiescence with his wife's proposal does not savor much of that superiority in strength of mind which is arrogated by man. Even admitting that Eve was the greater sinner, it seems to me man might be satisfied with the dominion he has claimed and exercised for nearly 6,000 years, and that more true nobility would be manifested by endeavoring to raise the fallen and invigorate the weak than by keeping woman in subjection. But I ask no favors for my sex. I surrender not our claim to equality. All I ask of our brethren is that they will take their feet from off our necks and permit us to stand upright on the ground which God designed us to occupy. If he has not given us the rights which have, as I conceive, been wrested from us, we shall soon give evidence of our inferiority and shrink back into that obscurity which the high-souled magnanimity of man has assigned us as our appropriate sphere. As I am unable to learn from sacred writ when woman was deprived by God of her equality with man, I shall touch upon a few points in the scriptures, which demonstrate that no supremacy was granted to man. When God destroyed the world, except Noah and his family, by the deluge, he renewed the grant formerly made to man and again gave him dominion upon the earth, and over all the fishes of the sea into his hands they were delivered. But was woman bearing the image of her God placed under the dominion of her fellow man? Never. Jehovah could not surrender his authority to govern his own immortal creatures into the hands of being whom he knew and whom his whole history proved to be unworthy of a trust so sacred and important. God could not do it, because it was a direct contravention of his law. Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. If Jehovah had appointed man as the guardian or teacher of woman, he would certainly have given some intimation of his surrender of his own prerogative. But so far from it, we find the commands of God invariably the same to man and woman, and not the slightest intimation is given in a single passage of the Bible that God designed to point woman to man as her instructor. The tenor of his language always is, quote, look unto me, and be ye saved, all the ends of the earth, for I am God, and there is no one else. The lust of dominion was probably the first effect of the fall. And as there was no other intelligent being over whom to exercise it, woman was the first victim of this unhallowed passion. We afterwards see it exhibited by Cain in the murder of his brother, by Nimrod in his becoming a mighty hunter of men, and by setting up a kingdom over which to reign. Here we see the origin of that upas of slavery, which sprang up immediately after the fall and has spread its pestilential branches over the whole face of the known world. All history attests that man has subjected woman to his will, used her as a means to promote his selfish gratification, to minister to his sensual pleasures, to be instrumental in promoting his comfort, but never has he desired to elevate her to the rank she was created to fill. He has done all he could do to debase and enslave her mind, and now he looks triumphantly on the ruin he has wrought and says, the being he has thus deeply injured is his inferior. Woman has been placed by John Quincy Adams side by side with the slave, whilst he was contending for the right side of petition. I thank him for ranking us with the oppressed, for I shall not find it difficult to show that in all ages and countries, not even excepting enlightened Republican America, woman has been more or less made a means to promote the welfare of man, without due regard to her own happiness and the glory of God as the end of her creation. During the patriarchal ages, we find men and women engaging in the same employments. Abraham and Sarah both assisted in preparing the food which was to be set before the three men who visited them in the plains of Mamre. But although their occupations were similar, Sarah was not permitted to enjoy the society of the holy visitant. And as we learn from Peter that she, quote, obeyed Abraham calling his Lord, we may presume he exercised dominion over her. We shall pass on now to Rebecca. In her history, we find another striking illustration of the low estimation in which woman was held. Eliezer is sent to seek a wife for Isaac. He finds Rebecca going down to the well to fill her pitcher. He accosts her, and she replies with all humility, quote, drink, my lord. How does he endeavor to gain her favor and confidence? Does he approach her as a dignified creature, whom he was about to invite to fill an important station in his master's family, as the wife of his only son? No. He offered incense to her vanity, and, quote, he took a golden earring of half a shekel weight, and two bracelets for her hands of 10 shekels weight of gold, and gave them to Rebecca. The cupidity of man soon led him to regard woman as property. And hence we find them sold to those who wish to marry them as far as appears without any regard to those sacred rights which belong to woman, as well as to man in the choice of a companion. That women were a profitable kind of property we may gather from the description of a virtuous woman in the last chapter of Proverbs. To work willingly with her hands, to open her hands to the poor, to clothe herself with silk and purple, to look well to her household, to make fine linen and sell it, to deliver girdles to the merchant and not to eat the bread of idleness, seems to have constituted in the view of Solomon the perfection of a woman's character and achievements. Quote, the spirit of that age was not favorable to intellectual improvement. But as there were wise men who formed exceptions to the general ignorance and were destined to guide the world into more advanced states, so there was a corresponding proportion of wise women. And among the Jews, as well as other nations, we find a strong tendency to believe that women were in more immediate connection with heaven than men. Lydia Marie Child's Condition of Woman. If there be any truth to this tradition, I am at a loss to imagine in what the superiority of man consists. Thine in the bonds of womanhood, Sarah M. Grimke.